true, that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions he asking. You find them inside you, recite you, reciting the records of Kashuk. We laughing, we drafting the passion through fabric. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listeners, listen, we traveling. Consciousness is always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magic, let's pass it. To top it off, the host are the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
That's my face.
How is your face? What's happening in your world?
Life is smooth right now, right? This moment, it feels very smooth.
Oh, I like that.
I was thinking about the episode today. I was like, we literally have no idea what we're going to talk about today. Like, no guests, no people, no us. Just we're like, hey, let's see what happens.
I always feel like we have no idea. I never have any idea what's going to happen.
Even with a guest, you're like, I don't know.
No, because they can bring who knows what they're going to, you know what I mean?
This is fact.
This is fact.
I mean, we could philosophize that literally we have no idea what's ever going to happen ever at all.
That's what I'm saying.
And it's an illusion of control that we, you know.
Well, that's literally how I see reality. That's why it doesn't scare me. It reminds me of what Kat says to me. Kat Zidane always has this little philosophy I like. She says, friend of the podcast, was on the podcast, says, relax, nothing is in control. And I'm always like, I don't know, just yeah, it's the way my life has gone. It's like I give up, I show up, I give up, I have no, who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, plans are good, I like plans, but there's so much,
right? And doing what you said you were gonna do is good.
Yeah,
you know, for other people.
Exactly. Well, like you and I say we're gonna meet at this time, so we do our damnedest to be here at this time.
Right.
And the rest is like, and we're like, we know basically what this podcast is. But like, other than
roughly,
that.
Roughly. I mean, in the broadest sense.
Yeah. Comedy and spirituality. Akashic Records get opened.
Yeah.
And that's it. I mean, if we, I don't know, I tend to lean way too far, I'm sure, in the direction of, I'll put it like this. This is cool. It's timely to, oops, I thought you were off, ringer. It's timely to something going on, which is like, sometimes I'll have clients and students that are a lot more, shall we say, what word are we going to use now? Persnickety? Detail, demanding of things on their timetable. Let's say that. And I have to be really clear with people and say, I don't operate like that. I will respond when I can. I have a lot going on and then I take a lot of downtime to like heal from what's going on. Like there's a lot going on. So I take care of myself. But sometimes people like, man, you get in somebody's Akashic Records and all of a sudden they're like, respond to my email immediately. And then it's like, no, I won't.
Wait. I think I got confused. You get into their Akashic Records and while you're there,
no,
their record keepers are like, you need to respond to this person's emails. No.
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 You know what I mean, right?
After you've gotten into their records.
Yeah, like if I spend time with someone as an energy healer, sometimes what happens is it activates for people, all of their childhood stuff gets activated, right? So they go into fix my problems and fix them now because I'm panicked because I'm triggered because all my stuff is up, right? You do an energy healing and like people's stuff starts to come up and move out. So then they get a little, sometimes if they have a certain kind of trauma, they get a little clingy, desperate, and anxious. And they can only project that at me because I'm the one who is involved with their healing process now.
Right. You're the one who can fix it.
Exactly. So then they get real email heavy where it's like, I have a question. I have another question. I have a question now. Answer my question now. Now, how about this question? They like to do this. I'm having a feeling. Here's my feeling. Here's a lot more feelings. And I'm like, okay, what do you want me to fucking do? You want me to, good feeling job. I know actually what's happening. They're triggered and they're activated and they want help. But the way you do that appropriately is book a session, period. Like if I were to give free feedback, healing and advice to everybody who emails me all day, which is a lot of people.
Yeah.
I can't. I literally can't. That's why it's a business. And you know what sucks about that? Everything about that sucks. I want to be able to listen. If anybody can empathize with how hard it is to heal your shit and get triggered every fucking week during a healing session, like all your shit comes up, it takes a few days to integrate it. And then like now you're like, oh my God, I'm aware of my whole trauma system. I have been there. So all the codependent parts of me want to answer every email everybody sends with their elaborate trauma processing. After a session, but I have fucking boundaries, because I used to not have boundaries and would answer every email and was totally burned out by the time I got to my paid sessions from answering emails for free for people, that I learned from my mentor and from myself that, like, I can't do that. You got to bring your shit to the session. That's what the session is for.
Do you also have that experience that you were doing that to your healers? What about this? What about this? What about this?
I did that a little bit, but my thing, I sort of overcorrected in the opposite direction, probably too much, actually, because I was also in 12-step. Oops, are you frozen? Oh, there you are.
I was. I don't know why. I'm going to turn off video for just a minute just to see.
What I was saying is that in the beginning, for me, I overcorrected and was like, I don't want to bother them ever, because I had been in 12-step and learned that, like, I had learned the basic idea that my trauma is actually nobody else's problem or job. It's my job.
Right.
To deal with. And that is to be honest, like, that is a painful reality to wrestle with. Because once you start to realize how much trauma you're actually carrying, for some people, it's almost intolerable to sit with it on your own. You're like, please help me. This is horrifying. But part of what we learn in dealing with that is how to sit with and hold what we have and wait until it's time to work on it. Because believe it or not, even the people who want to help us have lives and other clients and bills to pay.
Right.
Like, I'm not an endless fountain of availability.
And also, like, hikes to go on and hot tubs to sit in and whatever.
Well, you gotta have a life. You gotta have a life as a healer. But people forget that. And they think, this person said they'd help me, so they should be at my beck and call every 10 seconds. And something every healer who has their own business, it's like, you can, like, buy courses on this. There's tons of trainings on this because it's so common. Anybody working as a healer struggles with, how codependent do I have to be with my clients so they don't leave and stop paying me?
Right.
And everybody's always worried, I won't have a business if I'm not codependently, compulsively responding to your compulsive emails. So I learned that one early because it was like, I cannot respond to all these people and also do my job. And so luckily I had some teachers and some training that were like, you don't have to. You have to set a boundary and say, sorry, come to a session when you want to talk about that.
I'm getting a lot of freeze-ups and I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's me or you. I cannot tell. But you're pausing every once in a while.
Oh, mine isn't pausing on my end, but you're freezing, but maybe we're seeing each other freeze.
Yeah, I think we're just seeing each other freeze. It might just be a wackadoo connection.
Did you hear the words I said or no?
I heard 80% of them, and the listeners will hear all of them.
Oh, I got it.
Because that's how it usually works. It records everything.
Well, do you want to stop and start again? Do you want to, what do you want to do?
Let's just take a moment. Let's take a breath and send a little help request to the request line of, like, hey, smooth it out, would you?
So just to wrap up that thought, it's people who go into the helping profession, one of the main things that enables us to be able to help people is having really clean boundaries around when we are not available to help you. And that's really hard for people whose inclination is to help people. It's hard.
That kind of triggers me on the point. Triggers the wrong word. That just reminds me of what's going on in education right now that's making me, from a distance, really sad and angry, you know, just out of empathy for all the educators out there that, like, especially there's so many, like, weird little laws or things being passed to control how people are teaching, like literal cameras in classrooms. We should be able to log in at any point and watch what you're doing with our children.
Wow.
Because they think, oh, well, I know how you should be teaching our kids.
Oh, boy.
And that, you know, it's a complete lack of any trust on the process of what actually is going on with these things, you know? What am I trying to say? Just, yeah, that we, and, you know, also issues of, like, you know, oh, we got to stop them from doing critical race theory. So you have to turn in your lesson plans by June 25th for the entire year so we can approve them. Whereas most teachers are like, I actually don't have lesson plans for the entire year in the middle of the year because I'm a nimble human being who responds to what's happening in front of me. I don't know that this is directly related to what you're saying, but it just is, it's on my mind and I'm thinking about, yeah. And that's the sort of boundaries thing of, like, A, you have to take care of our children and be available to talk to us 24/7 and respond to all of our needs.
Right. And do it the way we want.
Right. Individually for a group.
Right. Which is impossible. Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's also like when part of what's productive and juicy, I think about it when it happens in a healing context is I can own whatever is mine to own. And then if I have clear boundaries, I just get to be like, hey, I hear you. If you need a different thing, these are my boundaries. So I get it if you want to go elsewhere. But you could also consider this client as an opportunity to look at why is this so very activating that I'm not available immediately? That is your trauma. And that is what healing is for.
Right.
So come back when I'm available and we'll do work on exactly that thing because that's your thing. And I know because I've been there because I had people who had boundaries with me, thank God, and taught me like, yeah, I'm not your like healing bitch. I'm here when I'm available. And I was right. Like, oh, got it. Yes, sir. And I got it fast because but part of that, too, was my own stuff, too, of being so like teacher says, no, be good student, you know, so we can swing in every direction of pathology.
Right. Well, and it's that, you know, if, once you pick a scab, the blood flows. So stuff is happening.
Yeah.
Once you start, it's hard to stop. I mean, we're I haven't listened to the whole episode, I'll be honest, but we were talking about the one that just came out, which will be actually two ago from this one, but with Cece talking about timelines and Carolina, my housemate, our first question ever on the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
She and I were talking about, like, it's relevant also to, like, the work my parents are doing in neurofeedback, where you heal, let's say we heal the trauma that happened at age 4.
Yeah.
But everything you've done ever since then is shaped from that trauma and your behavior and yourself, your whole identity.
Yeah.
Is now different. And like with Cece, it was like, now we go through the timeline and we say, remember now at age 11, we also need to address what happened at age 4.
Yeah.
And how it changed who you were at age 11. Now you need to talk to that 11-year-old. And the same thing goes with like my parents when they were doing neurofeedback work. They were developing a practice because my mom with psychosynthesis, which is all about reintegrating splintered selves, you know, splintered parts of yourself, was like, yeah, that's great. You just healed something. Like, you know, you're no longer afraid of water, but all the brain waves that had been shifted to protect and shield you from this thing are now different. And you're like, wait, who the fuck am I?
Yeah.
Who the fuck am I now?
Yep.
That's not just automatically healed because the other thing was healed.
That's so interesting.
Like now you've got to reintegrate self.
This is really good because it helps me understand something differently. Let me think how to put this in words. I've gone through, excuse my burps, that thing so many times of who the hell am I now? And just sort of like adjusted to it. Real quick, I think out of just survivalist necessity and out of like having us like when I'm thinking of my human design chart and I have a bunch of defined shit down in my lower half that makes it easier for me to anchor into something defined. But if you have a lot of open centers, like more than I have, it would be a lot. Yeah, it would be a lot harder for you or anyone who has a lot of open centers to like feel moored in anything. You're just going to be like, I'm drifty now. And I really relate to that in the head and in the places where I'm open. But I have definition in certain areas. So I can just go like, just listen to your body, do the next indicated action, keep it simple. Your body will guide you what to do. And mental constructs of who I am and my identity are not relevant anyway. From my point of view, mental constructs of who we are and identity are never relevant, which I know is a very risky thing to say because when you get into the topic of culture, like this is an interesting thing Rami and I have gotten into a few times where Rami will say something like, yeah, but culture is who we are. And I'm radically oversimplifying what Rami says. And I'll say, I don't actually think that. I think essence is who we are and essence comes from spirit and it has no culture. No culture. Then we have a body and a nervous system and there's other humans around and we're raised by a culture. And then we identify with the external frequencies of that culture or the behaviors or the whatever people do. But that's a choice. Once you've been ripped open to the core like I have, you realize even that shit is just identification with something somebody said. So you could choose to identify with the culture of your childhood or not. And what if what you are is so much more ineffable and light? And not three-dimensional, that identification with anything three-dimensional becomes a limitation, and on a certain energy frequency, like an illusion.
Right.
That's my point of view. But sometimes people need, I mean, culture, I'm not going to try to argue anyone out of they shouldn't identify with their culture. Like, if you need to identify with your culture, fucking do that. There's a million reasons to do that. It's just, I didn't have the luxury of that. And for me, it was always a problem identifying with culture. And so the liberation for me came from fully de-identifying with any of it. But I'm also an Aquarius with Pisces, Moon, Sag, Rising. So that makes sense for my life path. That's not for everybody.
Right. This might sound like a challenge to that idea in you personally, but maybe not. This may just be more of a humor issue. Like, there are many times when I hear you say things like, look, I'm just a loud Jew. I'm just a loud Jew from Florida. I mean, that's culture. And it still affects you to this moment, your personality at least.
Well, here's how I think about that. That's an excellent question. And I've actually talked with Rami, if you're listening, we're talking about you all the time. This is how I frame that. There's no getting away from having a personality. A personality develops as a way to survive this reality. It's just what occurs. Defenses and personality are the same. And personality, people think like, I'm so charming and witty and interesting. Look at my personality. It's all just survivalist defenses, really. That's all a personality is. So there's no way I'm going to have no personality or not be direct or aggressive, whatever words we want to use to describe my personality, because the personality is, it just, it's like saying, I'm going to do so much spiritual work, I don't have shoulders now. I have transcended my fingers.
Well, no, I guess that's the ultimate, that is what transcendence is, right? Is the moment that you...
Death
with no return.
Right. That would be nice. I'm ready. Not really. But my point being, what we're talking about is identification. I can't identify as an Enneagram 8 and a Jew loud lady. Those are qualities that through which the essence of me comes. And I use those words to go, okay, let's prepare you. The energies that I'm going to transmit now are going to come through a personality that has the following shape. And I do that so you're comfortable-er than you might be if I don't fucking let you know about it, because you're a fucking human with an ego and a mind. But I don't identify. I mean, I identify in the relative sense, but in the big, in the non-relative, the absolute, I just think that the absolute identification I have is with Source. So it's not who I am.
So Source has no culture. You still individuate.
Through one.
I mean, you're there. You have an apartment. You have a sweatshirt with the neck cut out, looking very flash dance, I might add.
Thank you.
Sexy. Go Jennifer Beals.
But like flash dance, nerdy flash dance, because I make
glasses
on.
Nerdy flash dance. I mean, hot nerd flash dance. Ooh, Let's be clear. I'm liking the librarian flash dance look.
Oh, that's good. Maybe that's my thing.
Maybe you found your stripper type. Wait, maybe. Anyway, yeah. So I think I get what you're saying.
I can't claim to have no culture and no personality and no ego. That would be insane. But I've spent so much time in these fucking frequencies of light, and it's just my sort of like mental awareness tells me, and again, this is just for me, okay, that what I am is the essence of light called God in the form of this body mind organism presently called Katie Rubin with a personality. But that's not, like, the personality is just the vehicle through which the essence is expressed.
Okay, I'm going to get real micro here. I'm wondering.
Please do. Yeah.
In that framing right there that you just gave us, does the essence that is Katie, is that even a thing one can say? Because is the essence that is you, light, whatever, is that any different than, is there an individuation then of that from anything else? Could you say, oh, well, this is the Katie essence and this is the Cassidy essence? Because...
No, see, I don't use the word essence to describe those two individuals, but some people do.
Right. But what you're describing is the ultimate return to the center, the source, the whatever word we choose to use, because language is fucking limiting no matter what we do.
Yeah. Essence, capital E.
Essence, capital E, is there is not actually a my essence, the essence of me.
Correct.
Or you.
Although, there's something like that, I think. Although I lately have a theory, you know, I don't have this all perfectly figured out. I have a sense of it and an awareness for myself, but like, it'll evolve and change all day, forever.
This is another one of our ultimate stoner conversations, I'm feeling like, at a certain point.
Let's get into it. I feel like my whole life is an ultimate stoner moment. That's my whole life.
But wait, if the you that is you is different.
Does the tree know that it's alive?
Different than me? And am I actually the tree?
Okay, now, yes, jokes are good. And some people believe, and I want to sit with this, maybe we could ask this in the records today, that there is a soul, a unique soul frequency. A lot of people teach that, like, what you would call my Katie Rubin essence, you could get in touch with it through the soul level, meaning the personality can serve as a vehicle of expression for the specific imprint of the unique soul of Katie Rubin. And then behind that is the pure essence of the divine oneness.
Right. And that when you say oneness is when I return to the idea of like no individuation. So I keep having an image in my head of like a pool that is just an ineffable field, right? But it still has in my visual description of it, there's still like cell walls, just to say this is the center I'm describing.
Okay.
And then little tiny lines that go off of it in billions, kajillions of ways to Katie, the tree.
Okay.
Squeezle. And like, so then there's this edge, the first version, which is just barely different than the individuate, than the all that is, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that Katie, that one with the little tiny Katie is whispered on there. But it's not like Katie, the one I'm in front of you. That's the closest to source version of you, which has very little relationship to culture or anything else.
Okay, that's really cool. I like that idea.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And then down from that are like, probably a lot of little tendrils off of the gentle that is barely different from the all that is, but it still is a little. And then off of that, there's versions of you that are billions, maybe also. Or maybe there's just another line out from that that is the more defined, individuated Katie.
Huh.
That is okay. Also has culture and personality and
I see
three dimensionality. I don't know. And it's actually not little, it's a continuum. It's not, it doesn't make sense
separate.
To have it be like boom, boom. Boomp. But it's like,
no, because they're not separate.
The closer we get to source, the less it looks like Katie.
That's the thing. See, that's where I'm interested in identifying with anything.
Right.
If you ask me, who am I? It's like such a complicated question. But wait, before I go there, let me say this. I think because I like your example and how you're describing it, because if we think about it, this, I'm going to counter myself now to explore this further. If you think about, so we have all the objects in the universe, right? We have Jupiter, the planet, and like the rocks in the sky called stars, and like Squeezle the dog, and like all these objects that are just floating out in space.
Okay.
Even if we look at, let's look at planets. So Jupiter has a different vibe than Mars, which has a different vibe than Uranus. So how do we know which planet is which? Because they're different, and Mars is red and Uranus is whatever and Saturn has the rings. So they are different from one another in 3D reality. Now, I think what we would say if we believe that unique souls have unique fingerprints, let's say, like there's a frequency to the Katie Rubin soul vibration, let's say, and that frequency has a fingerprint. It goes like up, down, up, down, whereas the Cassidy soul goes down, down, up, or you know what I mean? Whatever the fingerprint is of your soul.
Okay.
I'm making a metaphor here. Because what? Because fucking my soul came here to do specific things that your soul didn't come here to do. You're doing other shit, and Squeezle's got a job, and this pillow has a job. So if we each have individuated things to do, then that would imply that on the soul level, we are distinct, that there is a distinct soul essence, you could say, of you and me and Squeezle and this pillow. I think for me, I think that's true. I think also, if you're asking, what am I, who am I? In the absolute sense, just molecules vibrating, just light. I'm just divine light coming through a face. But if you ask me in terms of my relative human self and my And it's very relevant in terms of my fulfillment and my satisfaction in life that I meet the needs of this physical body and this unique emotional, physical, psychological being. Like, it has different needs than you have. And as I get better and better at meeting those needs personally, very personally, in a non-universal way, I feel more and more fulfilled in my life. And when I don't meet its needs, I feel less and less fulfilled, which then would support very distinctly the idea that there is a unique Katie Rubin soul fingerprint essence. So I guess there is. I think I'm wary of identifying with anything that is dense.
Or
that anything that has a density to it.
Or has edges to it or walled.
Yeah, I think so.
That in some way say, well, and we do it, yeah. And it's all, and the idea of culture also is still interesting to me because language is culture. Like the fact that we're discussing this in English.
Yeah.
Like the words we are using to discuss have impact, have a linguistic.
They frame it.
They frame it in a way that is relevant to a lot of things and to a history and to a.
That's true.
So we can't escape, at least in the, you know, we have a podcast and that is a thing that exists on a three-dimensional level. And we
in
are
America,
listening in America and people are listening to it in English. And
right, right.
And so like it's, yeah, there's no absolutes in this. I'm still in that sort of continuum space. It's like, yeah, you plant flags along all sorts of different continuums in terms of, in order to discuss something, we have to say, okay, in English here, in this moment, in my really cold greenhouse that I'm recording in right now, I'm freezing.
Oh no. Want to get a jacket?
But that's also part of my experience right now. So like in this moment, this is the way we're going to discuss this. I don't have an end to that thought.
Well, I get where you're going though. I feel like I get where you're going, which I think you can't. You're totally right. It's like, I guess I feel like it's a paradox because here's the paradox that I think is Rami, will tell you more than anyone else, probably who I talk to right now. I spend a lot of time looking at the individual called Katie Rubin's Enneagram, human design, astrology. And that's
right.
All to like understand me now in this body, in this lifetime, me, the individuated me. So I do, more than the average bear, probably a lot of that. So for someone who's going like, I identify with the absolute and nothing of the personality, why am I looking so closely at all these things that make up the ego, mind, body, organism of it? And I think it's honestly because it's both things are true. I want to know who this vehicle is. I want to be good at operating this vehicle. And I want to feel fulfilled in this vehicle because I find that not feeling fulfilled sucks. And I'd rather not feel fulfilled. I'd rather be fulfilled and whole and satisfied with my living experience because I'm having one. So I do all these studies to get to that and have more of that and then facilitate that for other people while simultaneously understanding that behind that, it's not the whole picture. Like it's both who I am and it isn't at all.
I mean, so many philosophical and spiritual, I don't know about most, but so many spiritual pursuits are literally just, you know, the language is always dissolve the ego, remove, find your way to, you know, nirvana means obliteration, you know, like all, but in order to do that, you have to be doing it from the point of view of that one human that you are. It's like, the individual Katie Cassidy, the individual seeker, even if I'm on a path towards, it is I that is on that path towards.
However, I hear that. But as a person who like sat in a mosque on the top of a hill and had a man, my TA, say to me, close your eyes for a second. And he like did some shit. And I went to the realm of absolute love and oneness and sat there for about a minute. There was no Katie Rubin in that moment. There was a witnessing awareness of the love and the oneness. And it was just an awareness. I was just the awareness of the sea of love. I was like, oh, I'm here and I'm one with the sea of love. All there is oneness. Got it. And then I came back because he pulled me back and I was like, could you just leave me there? I liked it there better. And he was like, no, you got to heal your trauma. And I was like, but the point being, you lose that whole thing you think is you when you sit in the middle of the ocean of oneness. You just do. It's just not there.
I wish I had it in front of me. I'm reading my father's book right now called Mind Leap.
Yeah.
Go find it wherever books are sold.
Mm.
And it is really about one man's quest to return to that, because he had that experience as a young man. And that's the framing for this whole, he's doing an exploration of like neurological development and how it's relevant to how we educate people, specifically in the Western world, specifically in the US, and how totally fucked we are in terms of how we're approaching the human. And I haven't gotten to the convergence of those ideas, but the idea is still like what you just described is almost word for word what he described as his sort of what he calls sort of his peak experience, which is once you've touched that, I imagine, I have never experienced that, but once you've touched that, you can't untouch that. You can't not know that that is the
fabric of reality.
The fabric of reality. And then you return to this human and then the rest. I mean, hopefully you're not just grasping at that for the rest of your life, because that feels...
Well, okay, this is really interesting, because I think what happened for me was I was so traumatized emotionally that touching that became... It did become... I was like, cool, that's all I want now. And then I just ran at it hard in a bunch of different ways, figured out, oh, I can have a lot of that. But what it means is leaving all this other stuff, like friends and family and connection and a house and a dog and a life. Like, you can have a lot of that if you want. It's just, it doesn't, there's a different question that it doesn't answer. And I became interested in the second question. In other words, I pursued it and I went and I got it. And then I realized I don't actually want to dissolve into the realm of oneness. I want to, like I just said a second ago, I want to be good at individuating into this being. I want to enjoy being a three-dimensional human here in 3D reality with friends and connections and respect for others. And I don't know, I just want to do the human thing because I'm here. And the human thing is harder for me than the dissolving into the oneness thing. And the dissolving into the oneness thing just gets me, what, to the same, to the place I came from before I incarnated? Or to the place I'm going to go again anyway? Like, what about what's here? But that's, again, that's for me. Because again, what I found was that the satisfaction I'm seeking, the wholeness, the fulfillment, it isn't in spending all my time and energy getting back to that peak experience. Although I do travel to the peak experience regularly to get filled up. It's sort of like if I'm a bucket, I go to the well to fill up because people out here, other buckets are a lot to deal with. And I get unfilled. I get drained. So I got to go to the well.
Siphoning.
And right. Fill the bucket and then go, okay, now I'm a bucket again, disseminating this water. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that, yeah. And that returns us to the idea that you are both. Like, you know that you are aware on a very deep level. Like, I'm aware intellectually that I am part of that.
Right, right, right.
Grand design, but I do not have that
lived experience.
The lived experience that says, oh my God, I can just be there and I can come back. Like, you, it's kind of like you have a really nice spaceship. Like, you can stop in your spaceship and go to that cool place. And then
it is interesting. I heard a thing yesterday. I was listening to some human design stuff and they talked about the 6-2, which is my forget what it's called. My something in human design is called a 6-2. And the 6-2, he said, I won't get into boring people with the very specifics of my chart, but in case there are other 6-2s listening, there's only like 7 types or something. And 6-2 is one of them. We're called the hermit role model. And the 6-2 line goes through so much shit. He was just fucking saying this shit yesterday in a recording I heard. And I was like, Jesus Christ, that is so true for me. Anyway, goes through so much shit. And the life of a 6-2 is divided into 3 sections. The trauma part, or chaos and darkness, and then the healing of it. And the integration of the healing. And then the third part is called coming off the roof to sort of tell the world or lead the world, whatever. But that's not, I mean, I'm not there yet. That happens when you're 50. So I'm like preemptively doing all this shit, I guess. I haven't figured it out. Anyway, I'm definitely in the healing and integration 30-year segment in the middle. And he said, that, let's say, wait, I lost my train of thought. We were talking about paradox and identifying with self. Oh, he said a unique experience to the 6-2 is when they finally heal the stuff and they integrate the stuff from the first third of life. All they're going to be interested in is existing because they're going to feel so grateful to just be free of it. And I went, oh my God, that is precisely this weird thing I keep trying to articulate that I've experienced here, where I was like, remember I kept saying when I was in Colorado, like, I finished the trauma healing. What do I do now? And then I was like, oh, there's more healing to, I get it. But still it's rocked me to the core to realize, anyway, I'm right where he described I would be in coming toward my Chiron return at 50, which is to say the whole thing, the whole goal has been get whole. And I'm so much wholer. I'm like pretty much whole. And so it's like, I'm like, what the fuck is it all about now? And when I keep asking myself, what do I want to do? What do I want to do? The answer is like, just kind of buy groceries and pet the dog and like sleep and watch TV, because I'm just so happy to be free of torment, constant torment.
Yeah.
So it's a weird conundrum to be like, oh, because then also if I look at like, when you look at like, what am I creating in my life? What do I want from life? When relief is real, it's like, why would I add things to my life that create more stress or more problems? Like, I can't justify it anymore. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like,
absolutely.
Be in a play where I go in 8 hours and they don't pay you enough and then you're tired after and you got to recover from it. No. Why? I'm whole.
But the flip side of that is like, also like, oh, be in a play where I get to go play and have a good time. If the other things were covered where it wasn't like,
that's right,
you know, abuse and exhaustion.
Well, right. But that's
my point.
If it was
just be in a play.
Sure.
I got a memory on Facebook of you and I in the North Plan. And then we went to live karaoke, live band karaoke. And it was one of those, you want to talk peak experiences. Those are some of them, like doing an amazing play with phenomenal people.
Yeah.
At a place that doesn't necessarily pay you enough, but everything else is covered.
Mm.
All the rest of it's covered. All the goodness is covered. And then you get to go and sing in front of, with a band behind you.
For like, you, that's pretty.
Doesn't get much better than that. For me, it doesn't get much better than that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think for me, it just isn't anymore. And
anymore now. That moment it was.
Mm.
At that time, it was. But I'm kind of in agreement with you to a certain extent. Like, I'm not acting and I keep looking for the pain in that. And I actually don't see it.
Oh, Cassidy Brown.
I still want it. I still want it in my head. And I will, I'm sure. But I'm not. It's like,
I get it.
It is kind of a relief to just be like,
isn't it?
I don't fucking.
Yeah.
Yeah. The grasp.
Yeah. The grasp is so exhausting. Yeah. I know. I mean, I'm still doing stuff like, you know, I'm waiting for Rami's agent to maybe message me, but like, I'll go like, huh, I wonder if Rami's agent will message me. And then I'm like, couch. Like, I don't, I can't give any more fucks than that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a wild ride. And I think for me too, something that comes up, but see, this is also in my human design chart. What comes up is I'll have a thing that says, am I living my life fully enough? Like, am I living into the juice of living, you know?
Yeah.
Like, is there more juice I could be? Like, I'm going to die. This body's going to die in like not that long from now times. So like, am I living enough to justify everything I've been through? Should I like, how can I soak more living up? And then that's an idea though in my mind. And I have a gate that's called that. It's like the gate of worrying you're not living enough. Literally, it's like that specific. And then it's like, if I come back to following my strategy and authority, which is the way they frame doing the next indicated thing in human design, I'm just... the question is not even relevant. Like in the present moment, whatever's the only thing relevant is like, be here in this thing I'm doing now. Like talking to you feels pretty fulfilling and fun and connected and good.
Yeah.
So I don't have any problems really.
That's like when you asked me when we first started today, like, how are you? What's going on? How's it going? Like, there's not that much to report.
Right.
And it's, and that, and like, I still attach value to that thought of like, oh, I should have an interesting story or I should tell you good or bad things.
I see.
But I actually don't have good or bad
going on
because I'm pretty fulfilled. I mean, I can tell you things that happened that were lovely. You know, I just spent a few days house dog sitting and Denise went with me and we just got to be together for 4 days and it was lovely. You know, that was nice. But,
aww.
But that,
yeah.
But I didn't even report that as like a peak. Oh, that was great. It was,
yeah.
It was so great that it's unremarkable.
I get that.
And like, that's the idea that I think you're talking about. Couch? Me?
Yeah.
The agent hasn't called, but couch and me. I mean, and what a fucking luxury that is to be in that space. Oh my God, I'm so grateful.
Yeah.
To, you know, and to acknowledge that, yeah, it's also because I have a roof over my head that's consistent and blah, 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 all that shit, you know, and I have groceries and I'm fine and I'm eating and I'm making enough money to do all those things that then I can stop and go, also, I can just be.
But that's the thing. I think, too, it reminds me of a lot of teachers talk about like that. That's literally the definition of maturity or adulthood is when you kind of realize compulsively pursuing any kind of thing at all is another delusion. You kind of sit down into yourself once you've done a certain amount of work or whatever it is that takes you to that place. And once you can sit down in yourself and feel at peace and whole, it's like everything else is just like, yeah, make sure the roof is still here and have connections and love and just be a person who's a lot. You know what I mean? It doesn't, we're not seeking big, huge peak things because I guess for me, I'll speak for myself. Sometimes those big, huge peak things, I still have to go home at night and be with myself. I'm still going to have to like shower and eat and rest and get ready for the next day. And during all those minutes, I'm there with me and I'm either content with me or not. And the peak experience doesn't fucking change it. It doesn't change my shower time.
Yeah.
That being said, peak experiences are really fun. Like, I don't know, I did doing the show. I'll use the show as an example, like doing this comedy healing thing I've been doing lately. Now I'm going to get into talking about transits because I can't not talk about human design. I can't. Anyway, there are certain days. Let me back up. According to human design, there's this idea that like every month, your particular self, your gates and channels and auric field and your centers go through a very predictable same set of relationships to the sun, moon, stars. So you kind of go through a trackable journey every month. And I'll give you an example of what I mean. At the beginning of my cycle, there's every single month, a very, very moody day, a day where I need to get all the people together and talk to them. And then followed by several days in a row of not really wanting to do anything, not caring about anything at all, followed by several days of needing nature really bad. And then I go back to the beginning. And that is going to happen every month. And now that I'm aware of it, it is one of the most helpful things I have in my life. Anytime I'm having any kind of day, I look at my transit cycle thing, what my being is doing in relationship to the sun and moon in any given month. And I go, oh, that's right. I'm on the make a show day. And there's only like two or three of those a month for me. And so what they say in human design is you can either use the momentum of a transit or not. Meaning a transit gives me the energy to like be obsessed with nature today. But that's just a transit. It's transiting through. So tomorrow, I'm not going to be that concerned with nature. Tomorrow, I'm going to want to make a group of people get together. But after that, tomorrow, I'm not going to care about that either. So you see what I mean? If everything that I'm thinking is my impulse, my true Katie Rubin impulse is actually being affected by the transits and all is going to change and come back and change and come back, that awareness helps you make new choices. Because you could say to yourself on that, make a show day, like, you're not going to want to make a show as of tomorrow. So like, just hang out. Enjoy feeling like you want to make a show, but go ahead and do what you're doing. Or use it to make a show.
That's really interesting, because I definitely understand that feeling of like, I go through constant little mini cycles of like, you know, I say, I'm super not concerned about being an actor today.
Yeah.
Like, and it feels really good to be free of that.
Yeah.
But next week, I guarantee I will have a day or two, or I'm like, I need to get back out and audition. I need to and I'm missing it, and I'm failing at something. And so, like, I wonder if that's...
I do wonder. We should...
attach to that idea.
We should have you look at your, whatever that's called. I can't remember the name of it. Solar transits or something.
Yeah.
I can find out the name of it if you're ever curious.
Yeah. Or other things like that, where it's like, yeah, I feel the cycles of, and they're usually like a couple days long, each thing.
Yeah.
Like I'll be really needing something for a couple of days and then,
yeah.
Or feeling the impulse for something. And it isn't, it's different than that sort of like painful grasping. It's more the impulse.
Totally.
Of like, yeah, you know what? I want to do that. I should be doing that. But then if I do it or don't, you're right. Two days later, I'm like, you know what? I should be doing this.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? That's what I love about having people often say, like, why do you want to know all that shit? And who cares what's happening with the sun and the moon? And it's like, because if you can understand what's actually going on, you can wake up to what you actually need and don't need, and what's actually like a waste of your energy and where you're spinning your wheels. So I don't know. It's
yeah, I don't know.
Pretty interesting that I've been looking at that transit chart thing almost every day going, oh my God, I'll look at it. And it's called like the day of laying down, and it's a day I'm fucking laying down. And I'm like, this is,
I got to be honest, Katie, it's probably the day of lying down, but, you know, regardless, enough of my...
The day of grammar Nazi-ing. Grammar,
colonial grammaring. Grammar colonialist. I don't know. Fuck it. Whatever.
I don't know why this is making me think of this, but have I ever talked on here about the guy who channeled Human Design's story?
Yes.
Probably
you
have.
Told the short version. And it's intense. And he was definitely entered by a
voice.
He was by a voice that it was non-consensual.
Oh, yeah.
He was non-consensually...
Awakened
by the light and the voice.
Yeah, he was light raped.
Yeah, that's intense. Yeah, you have.
But if ever you're curious, listener, go to YouTube and just search Ra Uru Hu, RAURUHU, three words, awakening moment, or you're still full of judgment after all these years. I'm out. Take this omelet, shove it up your asshole.
Gling, gling, gling.
I hate this guy.
I did. Little sticky hands.
This has resolved nothing for me. I'm going to Arby's.
Wait up. You're buying.
And scene. It's an origin story. And it's an amazing hour and 26 minutes of your life. Some of my current students are watching it.
Is that a phonetic transposition of who are you?
Ra Uru Hu. Who are you?
You.
Wow. I never thought of that. That's interesting.
Yeah. Because that's what human design is who are you?
Wow. Good. Nice work. I like this theory. This is a random sidebar, but our buddy, this is so random. I just thought of this because of how I look in these glasses right now.
Okay.
I just looked at my face and I went, Claire had her fucking baby.
Yeah, like months ago.
Yeah, I didn't know.
Did you know that she was pregnant?
I'm on another coast. No. So Fontana and I, mutual friend of Cassidy's and I, Fontana, who's been on the podcast, and I were texting back and forth about unrelated things, and Fontana said, like, yeah, so Claire's baby, da-da-da. And I went, back
baby
up. A, pregnant? Did not know. B, baby. And then Fontana sent me a picture of Claire and her baby. And it's weird. I'm just saying it. It's like so weird to move away from a place and still be connected to so many of the people. But then like tangentially hear something like you brought a person into the world is kind of a big fat fucking deal.
That also tells you like, oh my God, it's been a really long time since I was connected to that human.
Exactly.
Directly.
Time is so weird.
Yeah. Like I haven't actually... I mean, Claire and I have messaged back and forth a little bit. We're good friends, but we haven't been connected. Like, I went on a walk with her when she was like, guess what? I'm pregnant. I was like, what? But then I haven't seen her since then. Like, we had a really nice chat, a really nice walk, and then since then we haven't seen each other.
Gotcha.
But we've messaged a little bit to say, hey, you had a baby. That's basically it.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah, it's...
A baby, like a human person that she's responsible for until they're at least 18.
Yeah.
Or dead. A human being she'll...
We'll see if she wants to come on the cast. I think she'd be a fun guest just to chat
with. She'd be
with.
Great.
Great. And
so
maybe
great.
We even do like an improv scene with her.
Holy God in heaven.
Because she's both of our favorite improviser. Kind of. Like, I think we both are like, she's so great.
No, I mean, fucking next level. Next level.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Which...
that actually, earlier, I'm just jumping topics. Earlier in the middle of our conversation, it occurred to me that like, oh, based on that idea of sort of unattachment to everything, we should just do a short improv scene that has no framework.
I'm down. Let's do it right now.
We're just going to tell the listener, we're just going to do an improv scene. So this next several moments, whatever it's going to be, we have no idea, no structure, and it is improvised.
But isn't that what all improv is?
Yeah, but there's always structure, and we always tell them this is an improv scene. Oh, okay. I'll tell you why. This is from Denise. The first time we did an improv scene in a podcast, Denise was kind of like, I'm sure that was awesome for your theater friends. I didn't get much out of it because she didn't even really understand the framework.
Uh-huh.
Because we assumed a certain amount of like when we name improv and this is a game. You know, like if you go to an improv show, you get a little bit of framework. And if you get zero framework, it's only for the people who are inside baseball.
I have to challenge that a little bit, though, because I got the opposite feedback from a bunch of non-theater, non-improvisy people.
Who knew nothing about improv at
all. Yeah, they were like, oh my God, you guys are really good at that improv-y thing. What is that?
That's interesting. All right, great. But that being said, I think there was a certain amount, at least for her, a certain amount of like...
context needed?
Yeah, maybe not like didn't even get the ABC thing. Didn't know that we were doing that until like 2/3 of the way through.
But we explained that we were doing it.
Sort of. We breezed through it. But it's yeah. And that's just individuals with different.
I think you might be speaking about an individual person's preferences and needs.
Very, very possible.
That's as opposed to like, because I just heard so many the opposite. And everybody, there's always going to be 9 people who fill in the blank.
And let's be clear, it wasn't a complaint like, you guys shouldn't do that. She was just like, I'm sure that was great for a ton of people. It didn't land for me.
Got it.
Like most of our episodes for so many people. Like,
that's my point.
And every time we have an episode where I'm like, that didn't land for me, those are specifically the episodes where somebody specifically reaches out to one or both of us and says, yeah. Like, oh, thank you for that episode.
Totally. Like, a million percent.
That was the one I hated.
I know. It's so funny. Like spending 15 years sitting in AA rooms, you learn that idea because I would go to a meeting and share the most inane thing. I would just like words would fall out of my mouth and I'd be like, what did I even just say? And 10 people would come up to me after. You'd say, thank you. I'm going to get through the night because of what you said. And I'd be like, wow. Okay. You know, like,
yeah.
Yeah. And then that all comes back to detaching from expectation.
There you
like
go.
When we think,
and that's me with my attachment to the having our improv scenes be just right.
Yeah,
on this app on this podcast is like,
yeah.
But I need the framework to be perfectly laid out.
Yeah, I don't. But we love you, Denise, and we want her to get whatever she can out of whatever we do. Now that being said, if we're gonna do that, hooray! Let's also discuss. We can come back to that in a second. Can we? We should get in the records of something today and ask us something. Do we have anything? That was a fun sentence.
Let's do an improv scene and see if anything comes out of that. It's like a reverse herald.
Ooh. So we're going to improvise and then see if that brings us to a question about time and space.
Yeah, because usually you do like in an improv show, you'll often do like a topic and discuss the topic and then do scenes based on that discussion. But now we're going to do a discussion based on the scenes.
Okay, but I hate to break this to you. I actually have the beginnings of a question.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine then.
Yeah. Which, can I say it or should I?
Yeah, let's talk about it. Yeah.
Well, we started to talk about it the other time, but there's more I want to hear from consciousness's mouth about the relationship between spirituality and consciousness, because I had some sort of realizations this past whatever week or so about it. Anyway, so I have more questions to ask consciousness about, like, because if I recall correctly, what we got last time was like the human mammal needs spirituality in order to have a functioning sort of moral structure or like way of understanding how to be and care about others that have spirituality systems and nervous systems, but that like a rock doesn't need that in a way. Or, but then I thought about, since then I thought about, but what about like the star beings and other beings of conscious light that aren't in a 3D body or, and don't have nervous systems? Do they need spirituality? And I get, yes, it's just that how it's arranged inside them is different. Anyway, so I kind of just want to explore that a little more. Okay.
Great. We should do it. I think that seems appropriate. Let's, just because we promised it already, let's do a little improv scene, see what comes up, and then and then get into the records for 15
or so minutes. And for those who don't know what improv is, we're going to make up a fake reality for a few minutes now, and we're going to each be a character. No, really. We'll each be a character in a fake context that we make up right now. Why? Because we're actors and improvisers who like doing this, and it's fun for us. But it may not be fun for you. So get a coffee, take a break, watch a TV show.
Hit skip.
Or don't. We love you.
Cool. All right. So we're both just going to walk off stage in our minds.
Okay.
And then one of us is just going to enter in our minds.
I brought it.
How much was it?
$16.95.
Oh, that seems very affordable.
I wasn't going to bring it. I was going to leave it at home, but I brought it here so you could see it firsthand.
Okay. Well, let me sit here on this park bench and get comfortable. This is a momentous moment. I mean,
yeah.
I feel like we've been talking about this for weeks.
Yeah. It's Dad's empty journal, and it was sitting in my attic, and I still have no idea how it got there. And here it is.
Well, wait, who did you pay $16.95?
No, it just, look, the sticker on the front, it still says, from the 1970s, this thing cost $16, which is incredibly expensive.
Sorry. That's for a lot.
Yeah, who was charging? That's
a notebook.
The mystery. Who was charging $16.95 for an empty notebook in
Holy
the 70s?
Shit. Well, look at this clasp on the side. I mean, that's some fine filigree silver.
So ornately designed.
Yeah.
How do we,
can
shape?
We, can you, you, so you haven't even opened this?
No, I've never opened it. I know it's blank because it's unopened.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. I'm disappointed to hear that.
Yeah?
Yeah, like, did Dad, well, maybe, I don't know. Shit, do you have like a hairpin? You're a girl.
I have a letter opener.
You just brought a letter opener? Do you just carry it with you everywhere?
No, it's funny, actually. Since I moved to the city, my mother said to me, like, have a weapon with you to protect yourself. And I ran out of mace. And this morning when I was leaving, I was like, fuck, my mace thing is empty. And I had a letter opener. I was like, this is weird, but I'm going to put it in my purse.
That's good.
Yeah. Squeezle's not much of a protector. Squeezle, my giraffe, who comes with me everywhere. It's a keychain. My Squeezle keychain.
Oh, that's more of a totem for you.
Yeah, it's just a thing I have. But
just
it was right
keep
next
you
to
comfortable.
The. It was I mean, next
I suppose
to the mace.
You could probably use it to, like, you know, if someone was about to attack you, you could just go, yeah. Icky, 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 and hopefully that would, like, grab someone else's attention to look towards you.
Or it would just be so annoying they'd leave.
I mean, it seems like less effective than just going, help, someone's attacking me.
That's exactly,
loudly,
that's my point.
With your voice.
Hence the letter opener. So here's the letter opener. You
okay,
can have it.
Just,
yeah.
I feel like if I can just, no.
I don't, but should we break? I don't want to break the really beautiful ornate silver dragon seal.
Well, what's the point of having this thing?
I don't know. I get, it's a good question. Because I mean, if it's never been opened and it's blank, and the only reason I know it's Dad's is because it was in a box labeled Dad in my attic, Frank Bukowski. Then what value does it have in us opening it? We could just leave it closed.
Just have it as a thing in our life?
I mean,
I feel like we have unanswered questions here, okay? I'm sorry. It's a little activating.
You make a fair point.
I mean, he left us so abruptly.
It's true.
So mysteriously.
Yep. And this is literally the only artifact we have from his life. That's why it's so exciting.
Yeah. And I feel like there's answers. There's answers inside here.
Well, there was that one other artifact that Cousin Gene sent us last year, remember?
Yeah. It was the
You still have it.
It's a snuff box.
Do you wear it?
With a mysterious substance inside.
Have you tried it?
I mean, I didn't put it. So I licked my pinky and like just barely touched the residue and then like just tapped it to my tongue.
Okay.
And I got like a slight buzzing and a little acidic, that little sort of tongue depressor feeling you get in the back of your throat, like
okay.
when something has a certain like ozone flavor to it or something. But I was afraid. I mean, I have it.
People were still doing snuff in the 70s?
Well, I mean, they still had snuff boxes. I mean, they were doing Coke, but this was not Coke. I know Coke. This was not Coke.
Coke is more. If anybody knows Coke,
well, I mean,
it's come you. You were a teenager in the 80s. So,
yeah, that's true. Right? Yeah.
Do you remember Jenny Jacobson from your high school
JJ?
Dance?
JJ.
Her tits, though, those tits. She had like perfect
they
tits.
Just
I remember
stood
being
up in
so
front.
Young. Ping, forward. Yeah. Tits. I was so young. But she was the perfect height where when I looked up at her tits were at my eye level. And I just remember feeling so like insecure and small.
Right. When I took her to the prom and like we were at our house before going and you were standing there just staring up.
Yeah.
I was like.
Well, remember I had like a fit. I threw a fit.
It was embarrassing. We had to leave.
Yeah.
Why do you bring her up?
Because that was the night you did a lot of cocaine, if I recall correctly.
Yeah. I mean, it was my prom. It's what you do.
We're talking about snuff and cocaine. So you don't know if the snuff in Dad's snuff box was snuff or cocaine.
It's not cocaine.
Okay.
This I know.
Okay.
I'm aware of its lack of cocaine tea.
Okay. So what color was it?
Tell you what, I think a good moment would be right now. I'm going to pop this thing open and look at it. I have the snuff box here.
Uh-huh.
I think you should just stick your nose in it and take a big inhale.
All right, I'll try the stuff in
but
the snuff
box. But like at the same moment that I read if there's anything in this supposedly blank journal.
That seems like a reasonable thing to do right now.
1695 journal.
Here we go.
Okay, hold on.
Hand me the snuff box.
God, fuck. Oh, it's in my bag. Sorry.
You just carry it with you all the time?
It's at the bottom of my messenger bag. Just give me a sec. There it is. Ugh. Okay, here you go.
Thank you.
You just push the button on the side there and it pops right open.
Okay.
I'm just,
it's going to take you a second to pry the dragon silver clasp open. So
do you want
like a?
Do you want to snort or should I give you a heads up?
Give me a
up?
Countdown, like when you think it's going to pop open.
Okay, I think
3, 2, 1. It.
Oh, look! If I just insert it right here, it's not going to break it. It's just going to.
That's
just,
what she said.
Hey now. Okay. Here it goes. Okay. You know what? I'm going to pop it open.
Give me a 3, 2, 1.
Hold on. I popped it open. Don't worry. I haven't flipped it open yet.
Okay. I'm getting the snuff ready.
Okay. 3.
Yep.
2. You tell me what it is as soon as you think you know.
All right.
And I will read whatever is in this book.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. 3.
Uh-huh.
2, 1.
That's cold, hard hashish from Spain.
Spanish hashish. Well, what it says in this book is the property of, and then there's just a line.
Well, that's the first page.
That's the first page. Right. And there's nothing written on it.
Keep going.
But should I flip the page?
Yeah.
Okay. It just has like a child's scrawl that I can barely, it's illegible.
Huh.
It's barely legible.
Well, there was the theory that maybe Dad was dyslexic.
Yeah, well,
that led to his alcoholism, which may have been why he left.
I think this just says...
Let me see it.
Okay. Let's read it together.
Okay.
Okay. It says...
It says...
I wish I were.
You got that much. I wish I were. It's really hard to read. You have to sound it out for like a long time.
Yeah, the letters are really awkward. I wish I were taller. That's it.
Page 1. Page 2.
That's kind of disappointing. Oh, there's more. He just wrote a scrawl a little bit on each page.
So interesting. What a weird guy.
And he never removed the sticker, so we just thought it was unused and brand new.
Totally. You know what I think? It was probably if he was doing this hashish that I had just the tiniest bit of.
Yeah. How you feeling?
I'm like a little loopy, but like not in an ungrounded way because I had so little of it.
Yeah.
But I imagine if he was hashishing every day, you could only handle writing a single sentence on each page.
So he wish he was taller.
Then you gotta like lay down and sit. Well, who knows what the next page says? Let's find out.
It's so funny how he just wrote like a 4-year-old.
It's wild.
Okay, here goes.
Well, he did have a learning disability and they weren't great at diagnosing
those. I shouldn't mock him for that.
Yeah,
I mean, he was dealing
struggling
with a lot.
particularly being a, you know, a used car salesman.
Right.
He probably had to fill out a lot of contracts. He was probably struggling with that.
Yeah.
Okay, what does it say? Here we go.
Why
am
I so short? So he really was really concerned with his relative latitude, or whatever it's called, height. We'll say height.
How tall was Dad? I don't remember.
He was like 5'7". He was not tall for a grown, like relative to like people, other people in his circle, but he wasn't like super short. He was 5'7". A little bit of a small man.
I mean, they had that basketball game they all played every Thursday night.
That's true. This makes sense.
So maybe he would get high after work in his car on the way home from car selling, journal one line of text in the drive, process his sadness about his height failings, and then just like suck it up and go play basketball.
Yeah. It looks like there's only one more page with anything written on it.
Yeah, it's all the way toward the back. That's weird too.
Yeah. Oh, but there is a date on it. It's the, oh my God, this is the date right before he left us.
Oh my God.
And vanished, and look, the day before he vanished.
It's three sentences.
Yeah.
Should we read them?
Yeah. You want to just alternate words? You read one, then I'll read one?
Yeah, okay, that's good.
This feels like a bonding thing to do.
We're brother and sister. We need a way to connect. It's been a long time.
All right. Well, here's sentence one.
Sentence number one.
Word one.
Day before Dad's disappearance.
This is going to be deep. This is an important moment.
Reveal the whole thing, I think, and solve the mystery of our respective lives. No presh.
I'll start. My
soul
is
yearning
to
escape.
Okay, that's deep.
Dark.
That's intense.
Wow.
Yeah. You start the next sentence.
Okay. I
promise
to
never
explain
what
is
happening
now. Who's he promising to, though?
I don't know. People who...
It's like he's in some kind of coven and he's promising to like the grand mistress or something. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Who's he? I promise to never explain what is happening now.
Yeah.
And he wants to escape. What? Like his sedentary home life? His car sales reality?
I
thought
like
he loves selling cars.
I don't know. I mean, he says he's never going to explain. So
I guess if he's doing all that hashish, he clearly does want to escape.
Well, let's see if he lives up to his promise in this final sentence.
Final sentence.
You
and
I
are
one. A little disappointing, got to be
honest. This guy was a drug addict.
Yeah.
He was high as fuck when he wrote this. The only explanation.
Like, it's like he was in college.
He's tired of his life. He's at this moment that he's writing this high as fuck. You and I are one. Oh, good on you, bro. Now what? Well, that was lame. I'm still stuck on who's making a fucking notebook for $16.95 in 1972.
That's truly the question, because this is kind of a cheap. I mean, that lock was totally penetrable. It's not an impenetrable lock. It's popped it open with a letter opener. And it's flaking. It's flaking. It's not even real silver.
That's so lame. That's so like Dad. He always bought cheap bullshit. Every time we'd go to Kmart, remember, he'd always get me like the shitty jellies.
He'd go to like the dollar aisle.
The dollar aisle and get me those plastic shoes that would fall apart.
Yeah.
He was the worst.
Yeah. And he would be like, pick out a toy, but only from here, this bin. So I would always just get that little stretchy thing that stuck to the wall. Would you like throw it out and it would grab things?
Dude, you had like 600 of those.
Insane.
Okay. Well.
Okay. No beginning, no end. Perfect.
I think if we had Denise at any point, we've fully lost her now. It's all over.
Oh, great. I just lost one of the great loves of my life. Thanks
a lot. No, she'll still love you. She just will never listen to us again.
Or she'll just hit fast forward on the podcast when she hears improv coming up.
That was a nice ponderous one. I liked the pace of that. We were just taking our time, having an experience.
Dad, man. Played a couple games inside the scene.
You did that very nicely. You were always so good at that. So for the non-improviser, Cassidy did a very smart thing inside that game as he created other games that make it more fun for the audience, a.k.a. one of them being talk at the same time.
Talk at the same time.
Talk one word at a time.
And then...
Were there others?
Yeah.
We should have thrown alphabet in there just for shits and giggles.
Well, the other thing Katie did was the moment of like... asking me to finish a sentence or finish a thought, which is the sort of like the trust and throw under the bus at the same time, which is my favorite. One of my favorite things to do with a trusted improviser.
Me too. I'm so wanting to play Alphabet Game real fast one time. Can we play a quick round?
Oh my God. Well, okay, one round through the fastest game. It's part two. Oh my God. Brother and sister who don't have names are just—
Next day.
Next day.
And this is Alphabet Game, which means I'll start and the first word I say out of my mouth has to start with the letter A, and then the first thing Cassidy says has to start with a B, and then I go C, D, E, and we go all the way through the alphabet, and we'll get back to A.
We'll finish with A.
And so let's take a suggestion from the audience. Where are this brother and sister meeting to have a follow-up combo? Arby's?
Oh, look, they're still at Arby's. They've returned to Arby's.
All right. Always a good deal at Arby's.
Breakfast at Arby's. It's not a thing I knew existed, but thanks for calling me.
Can't do any better than this.
Denise?
Aaron?
You called me.
Aaron, I sure did.
Fine. I'm going to order breakfast, and then we're going to come to some kind of conclusion about Dad's situation.
Go. I mean, to go. Thank you. We'll take it to go.
Ham sandwich omelet.
I will have a ham sandwich omelet and three chocolate milkshakes to go.
Just black coffee for me.
Ketchup, mustard, and mayonnaise, please, in the bag, if you don't mind.
Let's sit down.
Man.
Even though we took it to go.
I wanted to go.
Nope.
Okay, fine.
Pretty weird just reading those disappointing sentences from Dad.
Question after question is what I've had floating through my head all night long.
Really no answers were given.
Stupid fucking bastard.
Tell me how you're feeling.
Like he's a dick.
Very interesting. The anger still remains, and I'm feeling pretty resolved about it all.
Will you get off your high horse and just let me have my feelings?
X out all your feelings and get neutral.
You're the worst. Oh, thank you for my ham omelet. I appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Zip up all your feelings inside yourself and move on with your fucking life.
Amazing. And
that was the door ringing.
Clink, 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 clink.
Clink, clink, clink.
We did it. I'm so proud of us. Okay.
All right. Oh, Jesus, yeah, do we have time to get in the records?
Right?
Yeah. We'll do it. We'll do one question and let them tell us what they have to say.
What time
about
do we have to be done? What time is it? Who am I?
We've been doing this for about 90 minutes.
Let's just do a briefie. We'll do 10, 15, something like that.
Yeah, great.
All right. All right. So I'm just going to do the thing I've been doing lately. I don't know that I need the formal prayer for this, so I'm going to feel into it. So I'd like to drop into, if I could, the Akashic Records of Consciousness. And so we do acknowledge the forces of light, asking for guidance, direction, and courage to know the truth as it is revealed for our highest good and the highest good of everyone connected to us. Holy Spirit of God, protect me, please, from all forms of self-centeredness and direct my attention to the work at hand. Help me to know consciousness in the light of the Akashic Records. Help me to see consciousness through the eyes of the Lords of the Records and enable me to share the wisdom and compassion that the masters, teachers, and loved ones of consciousness have for consciousness. Okay. Okay, that was amazing already because I'll explain. You know, the question I've had in my being and on my mind has been, if we have access to consciousness, why is spirituality relevant? And I think I asked this last time, but I still have had lingering questions about it. Because if consciousness is the field of light from which all phenomena occur, then what is the relevance of spirituality? And then as I was saying out loud just a moment ago, I'd like to drop into the records of consciousness, please. And I got a yes, but then I got this thing. Let me explain this. When I get a yes, my head goes to the left. And when I get a no, my head goes to the right. And with yes, there's an energy of openness and receiving and expansion that shoots down into my body, all the way to the pit of my stomach, to the base of my pelvic floor, like a big open feeling. And then there's a feeling of contraction and closing all the way through the midline of my body when I get a no. But there's this middle place. I call it like the maybe zone or the spirit zone, where if I ask a question in the records, it'll pull my awareness straight up and down, as if I've sort of been pulled into this enough to have come to understand that when I'm pulled into the middle, it's like spirit wants to do something or give new information rather than answer yes or no. So just now, as I was saying, I'd like to be taken into the Akashic records of consciousness. It pulled me up to the middle place and it was like, yeah, but you got to go through spirit to get there. And then when I said the prayer, so then it started to say the prayer through me. I felt like it took over in the same way that sometimes when I'm channeling, the Arabic comes through me from the Sufi lineage. And I'm not choosing to speak Arabic then. I know the words, but they're being said through me is how it often feels. This is how doing the prayer just now felt. It was like, and the prayer is occurring and I have to say it with my mouth whole. So then as the prayer was being said, the prayer took me into the energy and the space of the Akashic records, which is inherently a spiritual space. And through the portal of the spiritual space, I can handle, perceive, and receive the energies from consciousness in a way that makes sense to the human organism, is relevant to the human organism, and addresses the entirety of a healthy, whole, functioning human organism. Which is to say, if you were to go straight to consciousness and not include the spirit, spirituality, divinity, God, whatever you want to call it, you would necessarily be denying certain aspects of what it is to be a human being. Now, you incarnated, each of you, in the form of human being for specific reasons, which means you're meant to master, if you care to try, what it is to be in human form, not use the human vehicle to become, like, to channel some other thing and not be good at being in a human form. You're meant to like master being the human that you are, the human being that you're being. So you're meant to be good at being the being you're being, if that makes any sense. And in order to be good at being the being you're being, you have to be what that being is. You have to be made up of the fabric of what a human being is. It would be like saying, oh, I became a fish, but I'd like to be a fish that breathes air. Well, that's not what fish do right now. Fish breathe water now, or they, whatever the fuck they do. They swim in water and they take oxygen out of it, or I don't know how fish breathing works. So human beings need to, when they are becoming masterful at being human beings, have emotions, have sensations, struggle with the density of 3D reality, surrender to the rules of the world you're in, while simultaneously becoming better and better at transcending them. So in other words, transcend and include, as you always talk about, Katie. So if you don't go through the spirit, you are bypassing an important part of what it is to be a human being. And this is interesting. They're like, that's why you left Access Consciousness. You guys have heard me talk about this system I studied and was a part of for many years. And the bottom line of why you left is because you knew deep down in your gut, you needed to know how to be a human being in a human experience and integrate your emotional body and integrate your spirit body and then come to know the light and the truth of the realm called consciousness. Because if you skip out of the feelings and the spirit, you'll be an unintegrated antenna, if you will, tapping into consciousness in an unintegrated way. And you yourself, Katie Rubin, are interested in integration and wholeness. You've said it since you were 6, maybe 3. That's true. I have been saying that. I have been looking for that. And so then my next question is, and I want to see if Cassidy has one. now that, like, in the with the 6-2 line thing I was talking about earlier, that I feel like, huh, thank God I'm not suffering now from childhood pains. What am I to fucking do? Like, I'm just relieved, and relief feels pretty good. So I'm not sure what I'm supposed to fucking do anymore. Like, what is the focus of my life? Well, this is a bunch of things, but first thing is, they're saying it's something like you're still integrating. How do we say that? You're integrating still, and there's more to integrate. And then you're going to be continuing to refine and refine and refine what you're teaching and what you're offering and what you're saying and what you're being in the world. So know thyself and know thyself more. But there's something else. We want you to enjoy and have more fun, pleasure and joy and fulfillment. You got out of the worst of it. Now get into the best of it. Enjoy, fun, pleasure. It's funny because as I get that, this is just me saying this, I know it's true because I have so much resistance to it. I'm just like, why? So I'll go back in this conversation and then I want to see if you have anything, Cass. But as soon as I say why, who cares about joy and pleasure? They go, right. And that's your injury talking. You come from such a difficult place that you're so happy to just be not broken and just be doing well, that now it's like, remember, you're attempting to master wholeness as a human vehicle. So a master has joy. A master has bliss and pleasure inside the human vehicle. So figure that one out. You've got some time. Figure that one out and maintain that. And everything that it takes for you to experience joy and bliss, that's your, what do you call it? North Star now. That will be the next level of mastery of the human form for you. That is very humbling. That feels very humbling to me. Because when I sit with it, I'm still in my heart afraid to pursue joy more, because in my younger years, all I did was pursue pleasure, and it got me really sick and got me in a lot of trouble.
Right. You pursued pleasure, but it wasn't what you were actually pursuing.
And so I have to learn now, like, what is pure joy that doesn't come from trauma? Like, what is the pursuit of joy that isn't running away from something, but running toward something, running away from something painful towards something delusional, which is what I was doing.
Right.
Now I'm being asked to run towards something even better than what I'm sitting in.
Yeah.
And that feels like a big challenge, because I'm afraid to go backwards.
Yeah, that is that thing of healing the healed like reintegrating the healed person that we were talking about earlier. You already said this, but
right.
That, yeah, now you're still, even though you've healed that stuff, you're still the who you are now is still based on that old stuff. So like you said, like,
right.
No, but when I did that before, that was scary.
Yeah.
And that was bad and that was damaging. And you're like, okay, but you're not that person. So
right. So it's like changing my orientation to what joy is. And I think also coming to understand what joy and pleasure and bliss are from a healthy, integrated place.
Yeah.
I've been starting to experience it more and more, but like in little bits, because I'm sort of, I see it right now very clearly how afraid I've been of it. So that's pretty cool.
That's great. I love that.
You got anything?
I don't have anything for me right this moment. It doesn't, I mean, that was, I love that. Just, it's still it was humbling for me too. Like the idea, I'm still really into that idea of like, yeah, that we don't have to base our stuff on what we knew before when we were different.
Right. That's so good. And like making new choices from new places.
Yeah.
I can ask this one briefly. Excuse me. I've had like some remnants of the feeling of guilt about not achieving more in the theater, acting, TV world before leaving it. Like shame or guilt or something. They're like, it's more like guilt. Like almost like I feel and I have this remnants of like an obligation to succeed at a certain level because of the talent I was given. Like I feel like if I were honoring the gifts I were given, wouldn't I pursue it further? And therefore, is it like a cop-out or wrong and bad of me to not be doing it so much? And so, okay. So I'm just putting that out there. And so what I get is, no, it's not a cop-out and it's not wrong and bad. That's judgment. It's more like you keep asking for fulfillment. And we've given you certain gifts and talents. So if you use them, you'll get to experience that. It's like telling a boat on the water, you know, if you want to feel like yourself, go ride on top of the water and let a person drive you and have an engine and split through the air real fast on the top of the water. But if you leave a boat docked at the dock, the boat never gets to boatify. So if you're looking to feel fulfilled, you do the thing you are for the sake of your fulfillment. And so part of what you are is this creative performer thing. It's part of the vehicle.
So you're not free from it, but it's saying the measure by which you're putting it is maybe the framing problem.
What do you mean?
Having achieved more success before leaving, like you're attaching yourself to a framework of Broadway and regional theater or whatever, but instead they're saying, no, you do want to keep doing stuff, but do rather than measure.
Well, yes, and I hear it as like do it and achieve it at the levels you desire to, because that brings fulfillment to the boat of you.
Yeah.
Not because you're not worthy or you're bad or you're wrong if you don't.
Right. And you're not.
There you have it.
You don't necessarily need to compete in a boat race.
Yeah, there's no race, but you want to feel like a boat.
Yeah.
Boats go fast.
Boat's gonna boat.
Well, shit. That's good shit. And it comes back to everything we've been talking about today, about that there is a soul imprint of the unique individual. The unique individual has specific stuff to do to feel like itself.
Yeah.
And that's all we're trying to do is feel like ourselves. Some of us. Anyway, that was cool. Fuck. It's challenging.
Yeah.
I'm challenged.
Have fun with that, Katie.
Okay.
No, actually, do have fun with that.
Yes, I have to, right? That's part
that's
of the assignment.
Whole point. Like doing your work is allowing yourself to pursue joy,
yeah,
to pursue bliss, but not in the superficial, like, you know, take drugs, go party mode, but in the...
Like not in a dissociative, toxic way,
yeah,
but in an embodied, actual joy pursuit way.
Ooh, embodied is important there. I think we should just touch that.
And that's why it's like the feelings and the spirit have to be included in the process of knowing consciousness. Because if it's going to be embodied in a human body, it has to do with emotions and spirit. You can't get away from that as much as I fucking try. I want to thank the masters, teachers, and loved ones for their love and compassion. Get me out of here. I want to thank the Lords of the Records for their point of view and the Holy... I just licked the fucking microphone. The Holy Spirit of Light for all knowledge and healing asks that you to return the energy of consciousness to itself. I ask that you return me to my complete human wholeness and anyone else who's been taken into a more expanded state to my complete human wholeness. The divine portal and the Akashic records of consciousness are now closed. Amen. The divine portal and the Akashic records of consciousness are now closed. Amen. The divine portal and the Akashic records of consciousness are now closed. Amen, amen, amen. Good shit, man.
Fun stuff. Good stoner talk today.
Thanks for letting me go there to Stoner Land.
That was
very
fun.
Satisfying stoner talk.
Appreciate it.
All right. I love you.
I love you.
Do I guess your, we'll go
keep
do
doing
our
your work, which
fun
is
time,
which is joy.
Time work.
Do yeah, your joy work.
Do your joy work. I'm afraid.
Don't okay. be afraid. Enjoy. Okay, bye. Love you. Bye. Asking for all of the answers. Say what? All of the
answers? Yeah, all the answers. Hey guys, thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @allanswerspod. @allanswerspod. Thank you.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com